the move, going deep, speed race. He's got Hill! He's got Hill!
From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is Drive Time with Travis Wingfield.
He's got it! Miami is in the playoffs!
What is up, Dolph fans, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, we have some fun stuff coming your way. Chris Greer, his annual pre-draft press conference to break down everything going on with your Miami Dolphins ahead of next week's draft. Plus, the great John Ledyard joins me to break down this year's crop of cornerbacks, talk about the Dolphins secondary, and a whole heck of a lot more. From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is the Drive Time Podcast. We're going to kick this thing off today with Chris Greer's Tuesday pre-draft press conference. And truth be told, I really thought this was a very productive press conference in a number of ways. Number one, I thought Chris was great. Number two, I thought he got great questions. Not always the case, right? And number three, we just learned a lot about draft strategy and focus and positional battles and just how you kind of stack things from a GM's perspective, but also some information on the Dolphins' current roster, like, for instance, the defensive tackle group and Barry Jackson, who always asks the most thorough and best questions to get you good detailed answers back in return, asked about the thinking behind the defensive tackle position, adding that many players. What was the focus with that many players? Are you trying to get a defensive tackle with your first pick in the draft? All kinds of questions. And Chris Greer had a really good answer that kind of covered what Anthony Weaver and Austin Clark are looking at. And I'll give you some more feedback on it after the answer, but let's go ahead and roll the audio here from Chris Greer on basically, do you need a starting defensive tackle alongside Zach Sealer?
The exciting thing is working with Anthony Weaver, his vision and obviously his work and what he's done in the league and as a player and coach, and Austin Clark as well. So very excited about that group. Having Zach back, of course, after Zach coming off a historic year for a Dolphin D tackle as well. Very excited, but the group we have, we're targeted players, really like their potential and what they can be. So we feel good about the group. These guys, if we were talking about them today, they've been in working hard already, and it's a really good group, and starting to see that bond come together with that group, and they're all competing hard. And anyway, with the roster, it's not a priority, but it's obviously any player that we can add that helps our roster is a good impact player we'll take. It doesn't matter what position.
So there was a few things there that I thought stood out. Number one, he talked about the potential of those guys, and that's kind of what you're looking at with some of these signings. Jonathan Harris, for instance, Neville Gallimore, guys that have talent, have played at a high level at various points of their football careers, but it hasn't all come together yet. And I think about Neville Gallimore. You heard him talk about the potential of the guys, but also how they all wanted to play for Coach Weaver and Coach Clark. Now, Gallimore and Clark go way back, and so that's one of those things where if Coach Clark rubber stamps it and signs off, like, I'm all the way good. That guy has gotten production out of Zach, out of Christian, out of Raekwon, out of Deshaun Hand. He just gets production out of all the guys that he coaches up front. And I thought it was a very interesting comment that Chris mentioned a historic year for Zach Sealer at defensive tackle. I think the loss of Wilkins is in the forefront of many Dolphins fans' minds, but Zach Sealer might have been a better player last year. If not, it was close. And you still have that guy. So he's still here, and he makes a lot of plays happen for other guys as well. So keep that in mind when you assess the defensive tackle position. Let's go ahead and move now to a question I posed to Chris Greer about the versatility you have on the roster with guys that can play inside, outside, post, or box, and the like. Does that help your draft strategy come draft night? Here's Chris Greer on just that.
Talking about players, obviously, you've seen here the last couple of years with some of the injuries we've had late in the season, the versatility of players is key. So guys that can play all along the offensive line or in the secondary, move around, that's really important for depth and building teams. So it helps. We're always looking for those players that can and do more things because I think it just helps your roster. For us, we'll always keep looking for players that can do more.
And we're going to cover this on the podcast with John today, with Simon Clancy tomorrow, and even going deeper into other position groups here on the Drive Time draft previews. But I just love the Dolphins offseason for a number of reasons. Number one, that flexibility you have in those position groups allows you to be flexible in how you draft because guys can be flexible and move positions, and you can just take the best football players and try to match up your lineup with the 22 best guys you have available to you. So I think that approach is very sound and very smart. And it goes back to something we've been harping on the podcast all off season. Miami's issue the last 2 years was health and attrition at key spots and not being able to sustain a really NFL-level roster at some key spots. I mean, 2 years ago, look, nothing personal. There was some like CFL-level defensive backfields that started on game days, right? And last year, your outside pass rushers, Malik Campbell, is that a guy that we're talking about? It might as well have been. You might not know their name, but Justin Houston and Jason Pierre-Paul and Bruce Irving, like these are guys that were playing starting reps for you in a playoff game. Not Malik Campbell, he doesn't exist. But that whole concept of let's go ahead and we'll lose a couple of key contributors in Wilkins and Robert Hunt and Andrew Van Ginkle, but we got like 12 more guys that can help us sustain the attrition of an NFL season. So I just love the approach there. I think it makes you more flexible on draft night. And as Chris Greer said, it's a big focus for this team going forward. I'm not going to play the audio on this for you guys, but I thought it was worth telling you. He was asked straight up, will you take a look at a quarterback in the first round? And he pretty much just said, no, we will not. He did say that you never close the door on possibilities, but this is like one that you can because we like Tua and where he's at. More on Tua in just a second. Next question here for Chris Greer. He was asked about the approach of best player available, about filling team needs. When do you fill team needs? This is a two-part question and answer from Chris Perkins, who actually had a great question here for Chris, Chris Greer and Chris Perkins. So you'll hear his voice in the middle, but talking about when do you prioritize your team needs versus getting the best player? Well, never fill out team needs in the first couple rounds of the draft, right? Should be one-on-one, but here's Chris Greer setting the record straight on that one.
You always stack your board and you work hard. But your board, obviously early in the draft, will always look kind of how you set it in terms of best player. But when you get into the day threes, you know, the board's it's being picked apart, flying all over the place. So it's one of those I think sometimes when you get late in the draft, you end up looking for depth or to filling holes in your roster. But for the most part, I think most teams would be early in the draft. You're always going to take the best player available for the first couple rounds because that's where you probably have the most control of how your board looks in terms of how you spent all the offseason ranking in terms of all your time with the coaching staff and scouts to build it.
And so filling needs, so that's mostly free agency?
Or yeah, it's part of it, but it still goes post-draft too, you know, and there's still good players that are available that are veterans that are on the streets post-draft too. So, but yeah, you'll always get into that end of the draft where people are like, hey, if there's a position where there are maybe not a few players, there's a light at that position and you don't want to compete, you go, we'll draft to that. If we have, you know, like the traits in that player, we'll draft them and add them to that, to the roster then. But, it is. It's always interesting, the end of the draft process when you get to it, because you're looking at your boards and it's usually picked apart and no one has players left. And then it's really just looking at the depth there of where it is and where you need to fill. And then you make your decisions there.
I just thought that was very informative in terms of how the offseason process plays out, where you kind of attack free agency with good football players, you make your bargain buys there, you go ahead and bring in veterans for visits and see what might be available to you after the draft, you have your draft, you have the same approach where you get the best football players, you're kind of carving this thing where you're just adding clay to the mix, and that clay is hopefully good clay, that you're just getting the best 53 possible pieces of clay, if you will, and then you work on kind of trimming that thing down and shaping it to the actual sculpture that you want as your final 53-man roster. And when you have an Odell Beckham or a Carl Lawson in for a pre-draft visit, that puts them on the radar. It puts their medicals in your system, puts their agent in touch with you, so after the draft completes, you can say, hey, we didn't get the receiver we were hoping to get. We need Odell Beckham. Now let's go ahead and get those negotiations back open again. So I love the process of kind of thinking two or three steps ahead and making sure that come September 10th, whatever the first game is, you have the best possible roster, and you did it because you were very meticulous about each stone you turned over in both the draft and free agency. Next question here for Chris Greer. Are you more inclined to move back in the draft without a third and fourth round draft pick? Here is Chris Greer on the Dolphins draft strategy, which he's not going to tell you, but interesting answer nonetheless.
Yeah, I think we're open to everything, but also that also you don't want to pass on a good player, that if there's someone there that, you know, we all feel very strongly about that, you know, can really impact our roster. It's like, how far can you drop down and still possibly get them? So you always weigh those factors of, you know, yeah, it's great to pick up an extra third, but if that second round player is someone we really believe in and it's a, you know, like a Javon Holland or Jarvis Landry in the second round, then, you know, you'll take the player.
I feel like every year it's like trade down, get more picks, more players. And I like that process. I even remember the story I wrote back in 2019 for Locked On Dolphins where I said, like, the Dolphins have put themselves in a position where they cannot fail this draft because they have so many picks. And if they just bat 30% or 300, you would have, you know, four or five effective players out of that draft, and that's a good draft class. But when you look at it this way, it reminds me of 2012 when you traded back and wound up getting Jared Odrick and Koa Misi when you could have had Earl Thomas. Like, which one would you rather have? Sometimes it's better to stick and pick if the best player is there. And with that in mind, he did talk about the 21st pick, and I thought this answer was very, very interesting. Do you feel that you'll stay at pick 21? Are there guys there that you like? How many players do you like at that spot? Here is Chris Greer on the idea of picking at 21 or possibly going back in a trade-down situation.
We definitely feel there will be one or two players that we really like there is where we are right now. We feel that we can get an impact player there that will help our team and roster, and we'd be very excited to add. So we've gone through it a few times. We'll keep going through it here, you know. But we feel good about who would be there at 21 if we were to pick there.
Yeah, I feel like there's some gamesmanship going on there. If we were to pick there, there's one or two players. Like, if you're going to trade up, you better give us a nice offer because there's guys we want to take right here. It's just kind of it's the poker face of GMs this time of year, right? But I thought it was a very interesting answer there. And I think based upon the mock draft scenarios I've gone down and just kind of taking a look at what the general consensus is out there, which is never 100% accurate, it does feel like the premium spots that you would be interested in taking at that spot could have a name or two trickle down to you. So I thought there was some gamesmanship and some truth there, just some good answers there from Chris Greer. He talked about Javon Holland and the interest in a extension for him, a big piece of what we do here, he said, a big important player in the Miami Dolphins defense, and without the fifth-year option, he is due for an extension next offseason. He did say they'll be talking about that down the road in the future. He also said the Dolphins will exercise the fifth-year options on both the 2021 first-round draft picks. Man, it's been that long already. Jalen Waddle and Jalen Phillips will get their fifth-year options picked up, and then I'm sure we'll start talking about extensions here in the near future for both of those guys as well. He also talked about the tackle class. He was asked about how many of the guys do you like? Is it pick your flavor in terms of the seven or eight guys that could go in the first round? And he was very, very upfront about, you guys know what we like. You've seen how we play. McDaniels talked about this himself. Fire off the football, play fast, great athletic ability. And that can basically right there trim down what you're looking for at the 21st pick at tackle. Like, if you're not a fleet foot mover, you're probably not in our crosshairs. Also said nothing imminent on Odell Beckham. They've had discussions back and forth. That to me feels like a post-draft revisitation there. He was also asked about Tua hiring a private quarterback coach, and we're going to go ahead and have a Tua segment here. Let's go ahead and hear from Chris Greer first on him attacking the offseason.
No, you got to give him all the credit. He's just like last offseason when he attacked him, you know, to stay healthy and doing the jiu-jitsu or judo, whichever one I know. But he's just watching him work and how he wants to be great and doing it. So he took all this stuff on his own and told us what he was going to do. So you got to give him all the credit on that.
I can sort of provide some extra analysis here for you guys, and I can tell you that Tua has been working on his straight line and linear speed, agility, and play extension. So those are a couple of things that I'm sure he brought to the Dolphins in terms of things he wants to improve upon. Not really breaking news, right? Things that he struggled with a year ago, playing about 15 pounds over what he's at right now in terms of trying to add weight to make himself more durable for the season. And in doing so, the Dolphins, or Tua, I should say, kind of realized that the extra weight wasn't keeping him healthy. It was the jiu-jitsu and the falling the correct way. So down weight, faster with the injury protection. That's the kind of ceiling I think you hope for in terms of Tua's game. In fact, we're going to hear from Chris Greer on this next answer about trimming down the weight and getting to a certain weight they want him to be at. And he talked about how there's still more room for Tua to grow. And that line should just make you so excited about the future, because if Tua can get better than what he already is, we're talking about a top five quarterback in the National Football League.
No, I think this, to his credit, like, he's trying to do everything he can to do what he can to be great. And that's been from day one when, you know, Mike and him connected here and working through this first season and then making the changes off season, working through last year, staying healthy, leading the league in passing. And now this is his next evolution. As Mike has told you guys, we feel like there is a whole nother step that he can take. And so we're excited about his future.
We will finish up here on the defensive side of the football. And I wanted to play this answer for you guys because we are going to have John Ledyard here in just a second talking about the cornerback class. Tomorrow, Simon Clancy had a really good podcast interview with me talking about the safety position and the Dolphins offseason in general and just kind of what you look for in Anthony Weaver's defense. And I want to play this audio because Chris Greer talks about Weaver being so prepared with the visuals that he wants to display to the coaching staff in the front office, as in, here's what I'm looking for at these certain spots. And I think that that's going to parlay nicely with the podcast we have for you here in a second. And tomorrow, that discusses what exactly that might look like under Anthony Weaver using Baltimore Ravens defenses as kind of the jumping off point and how he could tailor it from there to fit his own personal defensive structure. Here's Chris Greer on the value of having Anthony Weaver in the building this offseason.
Challenging at times, but again, it's part of the job and the business. I mean, well, you know, I think the most important thing is trying to get everyone on the same page as soon as possible, so you can adjust through that off season for the free agency and through the draft. And I think having clear communication and having some idea of what they've done in the past helps. But I think a lot of it goes to the coach. Like Anthony deserves a lot of credit for coming in here, being so prepared and having everything ready with visuals and everything for us to go through, so that he made that transition a lot easier for everyone.
All right, there we go. Really fun stuff. Let's go ahead and take our first break right there, come back on the other side and wrap this podcast up with a two-segment interview with John Ledyard talking about the cornerbacks in the 2024 NFL Draft and the Dolphins' defensive backfield. All of that next. Draft Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. We roll on previewing this year's NFL 2024 draft class with a friend of mine, a great draft analyst. And I always tell you this, John, and I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm going to go ahead and say it again. One of the harsher graders I've come across, and I always find that to be very beneficial to the industry, because a lot of times it's about, here's the 25,000 players I love. I don't have any players I'm curious about in terms of their skill set. But John, you thread that needle very effectively. John, what's going on, man? John Ledyard, my guest here on the podcast today.
Well, it's awesome to be back recording with you and to be with somebody who appreciates the harshness of my grading style, because a lot of people don't. And it's just honestly, Travis, to me, it's like most of these players don't work in the NFL. And I think pretending like they do just deceives us. Like that's just, like, it's not as helpful as we think it is. I think people fall so in love with the draft process that they forget that there is like actual work to this. You know what I mean? Like you have to be able to be critical enough to figure out what players don't work. Otherwise you end up missing on the few that do. And so figuring out what's valuable enough at each position to be able to prioritize it is really essential. And I think the league has actually moved in a better direction overall in this. Like I think more players find roles on teams than they used to. Before it was like, if you're not exactly what our expectations were, there's no usage for you. We run out of options for you. And teams have become more adaptable to players' skill sets and shortcomings and so on and so forth. But I still think there are just very few players. I mean, to come into a draft and say, oh, we have 30-some first-round grades, to come into a draft and say that, and then look at how many players each year, draft after draft after draft, fit that criteria, and the likelihood that you're going to do that with the 30-some you've named is just very, very unlikely. So I think you're much better off being more critical than less critical during a process that sees as few positive results as the NFL draft.
Not to mention in year one of the impact players having that rookie season, because I mean, we saw Austin Jackson have a breakout in his fourth year last year. Like it, progress is not linear. These guys have different maturity and breakout years and in terms of when they hit their peak as players. And it's fascinating, man. And talking about, you know, the idea of, I guess, flexibility or having options to move guys around, this position group we're going to talk about today is one of the better ones for that. And yeah, man, like I really find myself like, there's times where the Dolphins have had draft classes or free agent classes where I'm like, I kind of like all those players, but I have to temper my expectations because like at best, it's probably going to be 50-50, like at very best, right? So it's funny how it works out. Every team has the exact same struggle, I guess, if you will, to go through. But I want to get into this now and talk about the cornerback class here, because we'll see. I mean, it's one of those groups where you go into the draft saying like Miami's probably not going to go in that route. But I always say if you make assumptions in this time of year for the draft, you're probably going to be wrong. So I do want to start with a question more so to kind of link the Dolphins to this class on the back end defensively. I know you studied the entire NFL and I have sort of a two-part question here for you. Number one is, I'm not sure if there are more versatile cornerbacks in the game than Jalen Ramsey and Kendall Fuller, and they're both here. And Javon Holland, you can say the same thing about his game at safety in terms of post and box and slot and all that stuff that he does. I'm curious, first, how that's beneficial to a secondary. And then second, with how you've watched the Ravens evolve over the years and Anthony Weaver coming from Baltimore with Kyle Hamilton, Geno Stone, Marcus Williams, Brandon Stevens, Arthur Millett, Marlon Humphrey, the list goes on and on. Am I accurate in saying I see some similarities in the makeup of that Baltimore secondary as you have here in Miami now?
I think that is accurate for sure. Interchangeability was definitely a big part of, especially with certain players, I would say, but it was a big part of what they were doing in Baltimore. And McDonald, when he was in Baltimore, I think it helps when for a number of reasons. One, I think if you are going to be a team that is more, and it'll be fast. I'm not saying Weaver will do this because he has a very different group than what they had in Baltimore. He has actual, like, and we'll see what the health of these guys are. But if they're healthy, when Miami's healthy, at least, he's got like some legit 1v1 pass rushers. And so perhaps it's not setting up to be as scheme oriented a pressure package plan as what you saw in Baltimore when they would move people around and they would, you know, everybody's the line of scrimmage, who's coming, who's going. It's all simulated pressures and things of that nature. And then you're bailing guys and some guys getting a free run. And that's kind of what you're relying on defensively in order to have success more than just these 49ers style defenses, even Philly and the four down and go, we've got better rushers than you do. We're going to beat you 1v1 when it matters. Our games are too tough for you to handle because we've got four athletes on the front line and you can't block us consistently throughout the game and the money downs and so on and so forth. So just different philosophies there. Both have been pretty successful. And so it'll be very curious to see which one, or if a different hybrid of those schemes kind of is what Anthony Weaver ends up coming with up within Miami. But I think, yeah, just secondary wise, the versatility of players is important, I think, because you have different ways to match up. That's probably the number one thing. Different ways to match up throughout the game. You can be more multiple in your coverage schemes and ask players to do certain more of certain things. If you've played a lot in the slot before, as Kendall Fuller has, Javon Holland obviously did in college a good bit. Obviously, Kader Kohou is going to be as the slot heading into the year, you'd assume. Jalen Ramsey's played in the slot before. You can follow number ones to the slot, which lots of teams are trying to do that. You can follow number ones to the slot depending on body type with a lot of different players. If there's two number ones and Ramsey matches up better with an outside guy, you could trust that you have a bunch of different guys to play in the slot against that. Another really quality receiver if you need to. So that versatility, offenses rely on it to be able to implement their game plans and the amount of different routes that you can get to from the slot. And defenses now, specifically Miami's, will be able to also counterpunch by being able to match up with those with a lot of their personnel. So I think already they're set up honestly pretty well in the secondary. The additions of Fuller, I think, has just been an underrated solid player for a long time now. I don't know what Poyer has left in the tank. But if he's got anything left in the tank, he is definitely a good, helpful player. With Holland, I don't think you'll need quite as much from him. Of course, we don't know exactly what Anthony Weaver is going to do, but Holland's ability to play single high free safety and do a lot of the hard stuff as needed is certainly a part of this factor and how Poyer is going to be used too. And it may be time for him to transition more to a down low role. And replace some of what Brandon Jones did for Miami. So I'm fascinated to see how it goes. I'm very excited to see Anthony Weaver as a defense coordinator, calling his shots, doing his own thing. And I'm excited to see if we see an evolution and a continued move of more Mike McDonald style defenses coming across the league, or if he comes up with something new entirely, a la, you know, an old Miami name, and Brian Flores is doing his own complete thing, you know, that's outside of the norm of everybody else. And not the first time he's done that. So it'll be fascinating to watch Weaver this season.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to ask you that, because usually when I ask a question like that, I have follow-ups and things I say on the back end. But John, you kind of hit the nail on the head across all of them there. So I don't really have anything to ask further than that. But we will have this episode will be paired with the safety class as well, with Simon Clancy from the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast here on Drive Time. So I'll talk to him a little bit about the idea of potentially, you know, that, because you mentioned a bunch of guys that can play that slot position, but so many safeties, like a big nickel role, right? Like, I'm thinking about the Miami's potential to maybe go and add a safety in this year's class that might complete that entire backside of that room. So we'll talk about that with Simon here in just 1 second, but I want to go back to the cornerback group here, because I mean, you nailed it, John. Like, Jalen Ramsey is Jalen Ramsey. I'm such a huge fan of Kendall Fuller's tape after watching him this offseason. You mentioned Kader Kohou, but we also have, you know, Cam Smith was a second round draft pick last year. I'm sure you have an evaluation on Cam Smith. Why don't we go ahead and start there, actually? What was your tape grade on Cam Smith last year, and kind of your thoughts about a player that didn't really get any playing time in year one, and how he could maybe make some more of his time here in his second season with Miami?
Yeah, I didn't actually see him. I know he didn't play a ton this past season, but I didn't really get to see him this past season, which I kind of wish I had. I'm probably trying to take a peek at him before the season and see what I saw in his game. But I thought in the year before, so what it would have been 2020, the 2021 season, it would have been, I guess, he was really good. And there was a little more explosiveness on his tape. And then 2022, I didn't see him play with the same level of anticipation from off coverage that he once did. I did think he was a pretty good tackler overall. I had high marks on him for his ball skills as well. Thought there was a chance for him to be like, even if he was going to give up some plays, to be like a playmaker type. When they put him in press, which was not very often that fell last year at South Carolina, I thought there were some real tools there to work with, that he had the right tenacity and mindset there. But he seemed like a player who like didn't have quite the measurables to be like an unbelievable, like elite player. And I know some people talked about him as, oh, he's first round caliber corner you're going to get later in the draft. I never saw him quite that way, but I didn't see him as, I think he's somebody who could be a contributor to your secondary. Obviously they're positioned to be able to not need to rely on him, I think, right now. But if he blossomed, it would be huge for that secondary, adding another piece in there, especially because you consider how often, if Weaver's going to follow the McDonald role, they like to play lots of defensive backs on the field. And one of the keys is going to be, how well do they play the run? How well do they tackle? And I thought he was definitely solid in both of those regards when he was at South Carolina. So his development, just in terms of giving them depth and another playable option, even if he's not, he doesn't have to be an elite shutdown guy, right? He just has to look at Kansas City, right? They're four or five deep a corner every year and making these runs. And they don't need, they've had certainly some really good corners, but they don't need like every single guy on their team to be like a star, especially when you have a Ramsey. He needs to be able to play like a Joshua Williams role, Jalen Watson role, like those guys in with the Chiefs. And I think if he can do that, they can give them that this season, they'll feel great. If they trust that, they may not even take a corner in this draft if they trust that. It's just, I'm not sure how much they're going to trust that given how small his role was last year.
Exactly what I was kind of getting at there was the idea of if Cam Smith is a guy that they really believe in and think that he has a future here, then I tend to think cornerback might be off the board, at least early on in the draft here for Miami. But we'll find out. The best thing that could happen, though, is kind of what you mentioned there, is we don't see Cam Smith this year because we've had so much attrition in the cornerback room the last couple of years. I mean, 2 years ago, Xavier Howard missed a big chunk of games, and without Byron Jones being available that year, and they sign a cornerback in camp and he gets hurt the first day. They were running out guys that were signed to be special teamers here that first year. Then last season, Ramsey misses half the year. Howard misses some games. It was just a lot. And so you needed depth at that cornerback room, like you mentioned there. And kind of going back to that first question I had for you, John, that great answer you gave us there. I'm curious, kind of turning over to the draft now, at the 21st pick, is there a defensive back, corner or safety for you? More probably suited for the corner position, but a guy that suits that idea best, the versatility. And, you know, not to spoil a potential answer here, but I look at a guy like, you know, Cooper DeJean, for instance, and gosh, that guy screams to me like long-term perimeter option, but he can also play some big nickel early on in his career, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, there are honestly a lot of guys that could fit because Miami doesn't have like a crying need for like a top guy or anything like that. So the fit part is actually probably pretty easy. Weaver is, I mean, he probably wants players who I think are going to be physical, are going to be able to play zone and man. That certainly fits most of the top guys in this draft. So yeah, I mean, DeJean is definitely one of those guys I think that could play in that role. There's also that possibility of like him potentially being a safety, which could be something that Miami ends up needing, depending on what Poyer has left in the tank, or eventually needing anyway, if Poyer's kind of getting near the end here. And so that could be an option. Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo played mostly in a zone scheme in college, but showed at the Senior Bowl that he can match up in man. I think he's going to love a player like that. I don't know that they're going to take a corner in the first round, but I think in terms of just the appeal to what Miami's trying to be defensively, he certainly fits a lot of those criteria. And I don't know that he'll be there because it seems like the rumors are he'll be the first corner off the board. But Terrion Arnold from Alabama played inside and outside there. Definitely a little bit of a late bloomer, but really came on this past year. I think he has wonderful press man skills. His off coverage stuff is fine in terms of his ability to close on the ball and all of that. He will get turned around in off coverage. He's a little aggressive, and sometimes that can work against him in that he gets caught on double moves. Guys get behind him, and he does not have that great makeup speed. So his high-end plays have distracted people a little bit from what I think are some weaknesses he probably won't be able to get away from in the NFL, but his high-end stuff is so good. Like his ball skills, his ability to close on things in front of him, that aggressiveness, the tackling, the run defense, he's going to emphatically check all those boxes. So I still think he could be the best corner in this draft. I haven't quite finished all my evals. By the end of this week, I hope to a corner. but he's definitely going to be very high for me. I just think you have to be careful if you take him, because there is some stuff in off coverage that it's fixable. But I think that if he doesn't fix it, he does not have that elite level speed, because I think he's a 4.5 guy, which is fine if as long as he's able to keep things in front of him and not be too aggressive, because he's not going to be able to save himself the way he did in college at times in the NFL. Everybody's speed is just going to be too great, and quarterbacks can make those throws regularly. So there may be some bumps in the road early on, more than people anticipate, but I think his high-end plays will eventually make up for it.
How about at that 55th pick? Is there some names that you think might make it to that spot in the second round where the Dolphins could be interested in kind of poking their heads into?
I think so, yeah. I mean, Ennis Rakestraw Jr. from Missouri is one that played a lot of zone coverage in college and probably doesn't have that elite level athleticism, but makes a lot of plays on the ball, has size, definitely would be a name that I could see on their list. Kamari Lassiter from Georgia. I think he's going to probably end up going later than this, just because he ran a 4.6 and those corners don't typically get drafted high. I don't know that I think that could be his undoing in the NFL, to be honest with you. But in terms of fit, I definitely think there's a lot of there with him, his physicality as well. He's somebody who will come downhill and absolutely hammer people. So that part of his game, I think, will really appeal to a lot of teams. But we just haven't seen many corners that ran that slow workout in the NFL. And so that will be a big question mark. He does play fast moving forward, but when he has to turn and run, I think there are some issues that could be his undoing. And then, I mean, there's a lot, honestly, this draft, once you get past the first wave, the depth at corner is pretty remarkable in terms of guys who just like had pretty good college tape and their athleticism seems to check the box that they can at least play in the league. Now, fit and coachability and character, all that mentality, that's probably going to decide who out of like the Max Melton, Andrew Phillips, Renardo Green, Jerry Jones, Jarvis Brownlee, people love, Kalen Carson's picking up steam. Now, Connor Rogers, my boy, he loves Kamal Hayden, who I think from Tennessee, who is probably going to go later in the draft. There's some people that love DJ James from Auburn. Like, there's just so many corners that are probably going to go in the second to fourth round range that can actually play. Renardo Green, I think, is probably one of the most interesting from Florida State, just because when you're taking a corner later in the draft, you want to know that they compete and you want that to, and you'd love to know that they have the upside to maybe make a lot of plays in the ball. He forced 16 incompletions last year, tied for sixth most in the country. He is not the biggest in terms of his, just his overall, like he's fine height wise. I think he hit 6 foot, but he's not like the thickest corner. Like, strength could be an issue you could see at times, but just a guy that has the instincts and the ball skills to be able to force that many incompletions, to play as well as he played in man coverage this past season when he was in man coverage. 60 targets, a lot of just 31 catches throughout his college career. Has been a great competitor in all that time. I think he could be probably underdrafted because he may not be like, oh, it's unbelievable measurables testing guy or anything like that. But when you look at the tape, there's not been many corners in this class that have played better than him and gotten better for every single year they've been in college too. So it's, if the Dolphins do want to draft a corner, there's absolutely no onus to do that in the first round. This is a very, very deep cornerback draft. I think that's getting lost in how much we talk about wide receiver and tackle and the quarterback's buzz. But the corner draft and the interior defensive line draft are two position groups. I'm just like, as I watch them, there are just so many guys who can play. I don't know if they're all going to be stars or anything, but there's just so many guys who can play. And when you're Miami and you're probably looking for a corner that can play more than you are, like, we need a top flight, number one, we're rebuilding the whole thing, we want a cornerstone piece to build around, they're probably more in the camp of mid rounds, we're looking for another guy who can play if we don't, you know, trust Cam Smith, or, you know, there's questions about some of the other guys on the roster. With Fuller getting up there in age too, like, if that's the route they're going, I think there's going to be tons of options. They don't have to spend a high-end resource to do that.
You really piqued my interest in the cornerback stuff. You've even more so gotten my attention with the interior defensive lineman, because I think it's a good spot the Dolphins could go with this year as well. My guest today, John Ledyard, on the Drive Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. Picking it back up here with my guest today, John Ledyard, talking about this year's cornerback class. Going back to the depth of this class that you mentioned in the previous segment, talking about rounds 2 and 4, and like, yeah, Miami has a pick at 55, but they don't pick again until pick 158 in that fifth round. And so it kind of seems like when you mention that, the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, typically when you have a glut like that and a bunch of guys that can play, somebody's going to fall out the back end and wind up late in day 3. So my question for you is, who are some guys that you think could make it to pick 158 that would be of interest to the Dolphins at the cornerback spot?
Also, just I don't know that I'd be too like if you want to move down from 21 and pick up another pick, like this is just the draft. Miami's in a position to do that,
I think,
right?
So this too, yeah.
You know, they don't have like these massive needs. I don't think there are certainly position groups they could address after they move down. They're in a year definitely where, you know, it's, if there's a great player there and you feel like somebody fits at a position that they feel like they need to address, then go for it. You know, I mean, tackle is just an interesting discussion for them in general, just because Armstead's health the last couple of years, and I know he's bringing it back for another year, but you got to think they're getting to the point where they may want to consider a future there and moving down from where they are in the first round. If you can go down from 21 a couple spots, there still should be probably tackles on the board that you could potentially develop there. So anyway, you can pick up an extra pick. I do think in this draft, you're going to be able to do that. So that's just something to keep in mind. I'm sure you guys have talked about that a lot on shows as well. But I'd say in the fifth round, it's always really difficult to tell who's going to be on the board at that point in time, I think, just because it does fluctuate. So the player I might be highest on, like the league ends up being super high on and they end up taking them high. But I think Kalen Carson has been one of the more interesting players in this year's class, like because there's been like basically no buzz about him, but he's played outside corner and he played a little bit in the slot this past season. Although there are plays where he does get beat, and we're talking about, remember, fifth round. So we're just talking about who can we find that might be available there that can actually play. He's a guy that will play the run defense. Absolutely. He will come downhill. He will make tackles. He isn't going to get his hands on a ton of balls, but in general, you can play him. I think he's pretty scheme versatile. He's not going to kill you in terms of his size. There's measurables. So you're looking at a guy who I think like he's not going to be the fastest. He's probably going to have to play in his more of a zone system to a degree, but he's done a good bit of stuff in his career. And he's played over 2000 snaps too. So he's a little more ready and he's physical. And at the very least, right, if you're getting nothing else out of him, you're getting a special teams player. And I think that's really, really important. So a lot of the things that Miami values, I think, a real value in their corner room, he brings to the table. I don't know whether he'll ever bring any of that stuff at a high enough level, just because nothing is elite about his game really, other than his physicality. But I think even if he doesn't bring it at a high enough level to be a starter in the NFL, somebody that could become a competent backup and could be a great special teamer because of his physicality, I think that he would be worth an investment somewhere in that range of the draft if he's still there in the fifth round.
I love those traits that translate to special teams, because like, I think they get slept on way too much, man. Like if you get a day three pick, that's a good special teamer for 4 years. That's a good value, because those guys cost $2-4 million on the open market. Like you're getting that at a fraction of the cost when you hit on a rookie who can give you that for the first 4 years of that rookie contract. So I would not sleep on that. Out of Wake Forest, by the way, there, Kalen Carson. I'm trying to do a better job, John. I know that you probably have this problem as well. Like I always gloss over players' names and don't mention the school. I'm trying to do better about giving all the schools out there, because people listen to the podcast don't know who the hell we're talking about. Make sure we give them the school as well there. So I'm just going to throw it out there. Kalen Carson from Wake Forest. My last question for you here, John, slot cornerbacks, man. I love this year's class. There's a guy from Washington State who I'm a big fan of there, but I won't mention his name unless you want to. Who are your favorite slot cornerbacks in this year's class? We'll get you out of here.
There's a lot of guys actually that played outside that I think might be able to play in the slot at the next level. Renardo Green's one of them. If they wanted to go that route with him, I think that could be interesting. Earlier in the draft, Sane Riestel from Michigan, I might be messing up how you say his last name, but he's somebody that I think, I mean, he's not big at all, and that could ultimately be his undoing. How his body holds up with how physically he plays is going to be a real question mark, because in the NFL, he will just absolutely hammer people. he did several times last year. And I just don't know like how his body type is going to hold up, because I think he's very light. I don't know what his weight, he tried to bulk up, I think, a little bit, but his weight, I think, could be an issue for him at the next level. But yeah, he's definitely one that I think could play inside in the NFL and played there at Michigan. I'm trying to think of others that might be able to play at that spot. I haven't seen Smith Wade, who is probably who you're alluding to, right? I have not seen him yet. So I he is on my list to watch. He's an inside guy that he can play there, you think?
He can play a little bit of both. Yeah, he did it at the Senior Bowl a little bit and had that big near pick six. I think he was cut down like the 1 yard line. But yeah, he fits the criteria you're talking about in terms of like feistiness and like just wants to go stick his face in the fan. That's like how I describe his game. He's fun to watch.
Well, that's the thing. So many of these guys didn't play in the slot in college, like he barely played this, but he could play there in the NFLs, or you're telling me. So that's a lot of these guys may end up switching and moving, but I don't think it's going to be because, I mean, we saw the testing, like this corner group tested pretty athletic and the size across the board is pretty good with the group as well. So, I mean, Jerrion Jones was a slot in college from Florida State. And so perhaps he's another one that will play there in the NFL that you can get in the middle rounds. Probably isn't on the board in the fifth and maybe too early in the second. So he'd be one if you pick up another pick. Perhaps he's going to be the guy. But, yeah, good run defender. When they asked him to play in man, even as a slot guy, which means I think he did play outside in 2022 and 2021. He's been a good man coverage corner as well. But this past year playing in the slot, he kind of went from being off the radar a little bit to being very on the radar for NFL teams. And so he'd be another one that I think could be like the physical and mental traits to play slot, because slot's a communication position, mm-hmm. right? Like you have to be able to tackle, you have to be able to play lots of different types of coverage. You don't have to be as great in man coverage. You don't necessarily have to be as great at press or things like that. You don't have to be as fast probably because you're not going to take as many routes vertical from that position most of the time, but you have to be able to tackle, to be able to recognize things very quickly, to be able to play a lot of different coverages, to be able to communicate to the rest of the defense, to be able to set the edge at times in the run game, things like that. And I think he can do all of those things. So Jerrion Jones is probably another name to be able to keep in mind.
At Ledyard NFL Draft, he does all 22 breakdowns for the Chiefs and Lions on SB Nation. Yin's No Ball of Steelers podcast. John, you do it all, man. You made us all smarter today and got us more education on this year's crop of cornerbacks. Thank you so much for your time. Be well, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Always a blast to talk to you, Travis. Really appreciate it.
And there he goes, and there we go for another edition of the Drive Time Podcast. We're going to have another episode for you guys tomorrow with the great Simon Clancy. You do not want to miss that. We're kind of ramping up here these next couple of weeks. We'll have 4 podcasts for you guys this week. I think we're going to have 5 or 6 next week. So keep it tuned right here for the best Dolphins coverage in the land. In the meantime, you all please be sure to subscribe, rate, review the podcast. Go ahead and give me a follow on social at Wingfield NFL, the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank Podcast with Seth and Juice, the YouTube channel for media availabilities, Dolphins Today, my Drive Time free agent interviews and future draft interviews with prospects that we take this April. And last but not least, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up. Carolina Cameron, daddy's coming home.